Everyone, and welcome to Ascension Day, a Warhammer 40,000 Gene Stealer Cult podcast. First off, sorry for not putting out an episode forever. Life's been life, and had a bunch of stuff all go down all at the same time, but I appreciate you guys coming in to listen to this latest episode. And on this episode, I have the illustrious, the amazing Ennis Wilson. Ennis, how's it going, man?
I'm doing well. Thank you, Gabe. It is a pleasure to be here talking one of my favorite armies in the game.
Absolutely. Well, definitely love having you in. On today's episode, we're going to be going over taking GSC to GTs / Super Major events. Both of us have recently gone to a GT. Ennis here won the Hellstorm Gaming major
but called Super All-Stars, which just makes it very confusing.
That's why I was like, I was reading it, I'm like, I don't know what to call this, the tournament, the big one. It is recently went and just demolished the Hellstorm major. I took with Outlander Claw. I took Coast of Ascension to Nova. Beat my expectation there, so I was pretty happy with that. And yeah, we're just gonna kind of talk about our experiences and how we're kind of like, what's the pulse of the faction when it comes to like in a competitive sense, taking it to competitive events. As always, if you guys want to continue any discussion about the episode, there will be a link tree in the description where you can go to the Discord and talk about GeneStealer stuff. And I will also have all of the links for Stat Check and for all of Ennis's stuff in there as well. Ennis, real quick, do you mind talking about your coaching and everything and what you do with Stat Check?
Yeah, so I am 12th at this point of Stat Check. There are a lot of us. We keep multiplying. We are a weekly 40k show. We go live at 11 p.m. on Tuesdays UK time. We talk about 40k and the meta. If you've not heard, if we do metadata dashboard, we run the global ELO as well. A whole bunch of stuff in that sort of sphere. And I'm also a full-time 40k coach. So if you like what I have to say here and you're interested in hearing more from me, you can check that out on the Stat Check website as well, which is stat-check.com/coaching. And it's greatly appreciated, Gabe, for giving me the platform to do that.
Yeah, absolutely. I'll put my little plug in. I've used you a few times in this, and it's always been great. I highly recommend anyone who wants to kind of expand their 40k knowledge on a more individual basis. Please use Ennis. He's fantastic. Especially, you know, myself being full-time work and military and dad and all sorts of other stuff, having someone in my corner to like help fill gaps that I'm not able to fill by going to events, it's really nice. So highly recommend. Cool. All right, now that we got that out of the way. So, like I said, we are going to be talking about bringing GSC to GT events. Talking anything more than three rounds, or about five rounds minimum, multi-day, with a sense of like ramping difficulty. You know what I mean? As you start to win game ones, two, and three, you're getting into other people who are undefeated up until that point, and this is where you're going to be really seeing a lot of medalists, a lot of players who are also trying to win. And, some armies perform differently in those circumstances. I know that on the Stat Check show and everything, and on Art of War, they talk about how certain armies are more better suited for singles, you know, GT type situations, and some are better suited for teams, where pairings, where there's a bit more of a chess game when it comes to like pairings and stuff like that. So specifically, we're kind of talking about like, you know, what would be your experience, you know, what would be how you would go about best preparing for bringing GSC to a GT, and how we've been faring, you know, and being bring GSC to GTs. So first off, I'm gonna talk about my experience at Nova. It's not gonna be the it's not I'm not gonna talk too long about this. And then we're gonna go into how Innes did at the Hellstorm Major. Whenever we so for Innes's experience, he did actually put out a or you did actually put out a pretty nice video, like specifically going into each game and breaking that down a bit more turn by turn. So I'm gonna have that linked in the description as well. But in this in today we'll be kind of approaching this from a high level, more of a theory point of view. So what Innes and I will kind of like dive into is the is kind of the why he brought the list he did, his own individual kind of matrix, like what was his expectations going into it, and how did he overcome some of the some of the not necessarily the failures of the army, but some of the parts of the army that are a little bit that struggle a bit into the
Less
wider
concerned
meta.
is maybe a good word for it.
Yeah, exactly. The parts of the army that are a bit less consistent. Cool. All right. Well, we could go ahead and go into that. So first off, going into Nova. So I brought Host of Ascension, and I was kind of meandering between House of Ascension and Brood Surge. In my own testing, Brood Surge was really fun. It was really cool when it connected, but it was that connected part. That part can be a bit of a could be a bit of a toss up. If someone was able to just screen you out forever, which some armies can, then you were kind of screwed. So I kind of wanted to fall back on a style that I was a little bit more used to, and that was Host of Ascension. I ended up bringing 60 neophytes, a brick of all kitted out the same with seismics, lasers, grenades, and flamethrowers. A brick of 10 flamer acolytes with demos, two by five with just echoes with just flamers. Couple ben this is very character heavy. A couple Benefictus, a Primus with a chink of their armor, Primus with nothing. Couple Nexus, which was kind of I know a lot of people were kind of interested in that decision. A Jackal Alphys and a couple Lone Ops, some Ridge Runners, an Aberrant led by Aberrant Brick, so 10 Aberrants led by Bahamut, and a couple Ridge Runners. So pretty like similar to an index list, you know, albeit, you know, some the inclusion of the Benefictus and some kind of ratio changes of neophytes to acolytes. But overall, kind of tried to accomplish that same goal as the index of just deleting things.
I want big nukes from reserve. That's what Host of Ascension is there for, right?
Exactly. And honestly, for the most part, more often than not, it got to do that. Overall, in terms of my performance, I ended up going 4-3. I did end up dropping after game seven. So I wasn't able to play 8-9. Just was feeling pretty crappy. I think that there was a bug going around Nova. And towards the end, I was just like, I can't even, I could barely move models at that point. So I was like, we'll call it good. But ended up going 3-0 day one. And then 1-2 day two. I was able to get into the XN1 bracket because Nova does do a bracket after game five. Does do a bracket after game five. So I was able to get the XN1. At one point, it looked like I was going to make the top cut, and then BCP does what BCP does and regonculates everything, and I went from 13th place to 26th place, which made me the sad, but it's all right. I was, I'm actually kind of happy that happened in a way, because then I was really worried about my balls being instantly crushed by everything else that was in the top cut. So I had a little bit of breathing room. I was able to play a couple of games of somewhat fair Warhammer. But overall, I was super happy. I went into this realizing I'm taking an army that had at the time a 38% win rate, using a detachment that many consider not to be the best, and went did okay with it. So overall, I was pretty happy with how the list worked. At this, I probably will, if I do run another Host of Ascension like tournament, I think I will do some changes to the list, just because I like the demo acolytes. There are some games where they just like they didn't have a clear purpose. You know, they used to be the I look at something and delete it thing. They are not that anymore. I mean, they can be into the right targets, but more often than not, they're not that. They're good. They're still a good user of tunnel crawlers. They're a great user of primed and readied. But you know, I do think there's a world where maybe they get dropped, and then you know we kind of explore some mind laser ridge runners, or maybe even just more neophytes. Maybe possibly dropping the aberrants and just replacing them with just a shit ton of pure strains. But overall, not too sad about how the games went. Innis, what are your thoughts? What are your thoughts on the Host of Ascension and all that stuff?
Yeah, I think Host Ascension is like really interesting because it very clearly has the highest like individual ceiling for damage output in the army, right? You get to just say point click, that thing goes away. And there's not a lot of other things in GSC that get to do that. So it definitely has like its own unique like area to explore. I think the problem with it is that it's really bad on converting on like meaningful game state changes from that damage output against better players. Which is to say, when you do something, it looks really cool. You do a bunch of damage, you nuke something, and then your unit dies, and it was an expensive unit with a character, and maybe you get lucky and it goes back into reserve or it gets tagged. But often at the time it's just gonna die, because you kind of against better players, you're going to have to go quite close to do that damage. Which then results in you being, really interactable, or they just never give you anything that's worth you trading your big units for. You have your Demo Charge Acolytes unit that trades down and then never really does the same damage again without the characters. You have your Neophyte squad that, yeah, shoots really hard the first time, but it's never going to do anything again. And you don't have any like actionable like way to change the game state from there. Like you're not going to hold objectives better because you killed the one big thing in your opponent's army, right? And everything else in Host of Ascension is kind of so nickel and dimey that you're never really killing their chaff units either, because it requires so much commitment onto your big stuff that you just don't have the same unit volume as some of the other builds, that you almost always find that you're either trading down or you're trading and then losing the game. And the games you win with it will be the games where your opponent has like one or two big things that just get crushed and tabled. And those games are going to feel great, right? Like, of course they are. You're going to drop down, you're going to delete Bellicor or, the
Dengar
Silent King
or
or Angron on turn one, and he never comes back, and it's like, cool, the game is over because I deleted the one big thing that my opponent overexposed. And it's really good at, like, I don't want to say it in a bad way, but like punishing weaker players, right? It's going to win those games quite easily because you just drop in, you kill the thing, and they don't have a recourse, right? They just lose. And, you know, that's good. It's good to win the easy games. Any list that wants to do well at a tournament is going to have to win the easy games, right? That's a precursor to doing well. But it doesn't kind of get over the next hurdle at the current points values.
Exactly. And that's kind of how I felt. Like, there are so many times where I was like, oh, my kingdom for a fire and fade. Or something of that mechanic where it's like, okay, I drop, I shoot, I move. And, like, you know, do, like, the Necron Warrior special. You know what I mean? With, like, a Chronomancer. Like, I just look at them with so much envy because they're doing what I'm doing.
You could do the Jackal Alphys. Don't do the Jackal Alphys.
Pain. But yeah, and that definitely happened in my games. And it's actually, there are many times where I was like, I wish I was playing Xeno Creator right now, where I have Advance in Charge and just the ability to have that recursion. Recursion, I think, is the biggest word and biggest downfall of Host of Ascension, because they so miss the old Return to the Shadows, where you're really getting to get everything out of those neophyte bricks. If they still had it, I think Host of Ascension could win a GT no problem.
If you could still go back in the reserve, yeah, it would just be a different army, right? Like, you would have 100%. So much flexibility, so much capacity to just kind of, you know, you drop in safely, you trade, and then, but you don't trade, right? You just drop in on a safe angle and you go back into reserve. Whereas now you drop in somewhere safe and you never interact with the game again, because your opponent just goes, well, you're all the way over there. I don't ever need to shoot you or interact with you. You can't do anything. Yeah, cool. You could come back, but, like, that's not how we're going to play this game. I'm going to leave that area. And maybe you lock down one objective, right? And that gets you an objective, but it doesn't get you a game win. It just gets you positioning. And that's kind of the problem, is it's just positioning.
Yeah. And, you know, into some armies, the current, you know, Return to Shadows was actually pretty good. You know what I mean? Like, so I had a game against Guard, and, like, my Guard opponent was just like, well, I need to shoot you. Like, I'm not meleeing you to death. So, what are we doing here?
See, that's the trick. He hadn't realized your existential fear of getting charged by a single Chimera.
Yeah, it's true. Well, that's why I killed the menace. I hate that dies. But yeah, it definitely, like, I am not saying that, like, that Host of Ascension is necessarily bad. Like, this was the best Nova I've ever had. Like, so I've only been to two, and this one was the best out of the two that I've had. Last year I played Chaos Knights, this year I brought Host of Ascension. Like, in terms, so last year I think because I was a bracket below Tim, because Tim Penny was there too. So I think I was bracket three, I want to say three or four, because I think I was like 2-2 whenever I went to the brackets. So in terms of, like, a bracket level, I was great. Like, at one point I had gone to table one, which was like a super awesome experience. So definitely I do think that Host of Ascension has legs, but when it falls flat, it falls flat very hard.
Yeah, I think that's the biggest thing, right? There's no recovery mechanics in Host of Ascension. You are very reliant on doing your drop turn and having it work. And that ultimately, over the course of a longer tournament, makes you vulnerable to, you know, swingy dice, swingy gameplay situations, right? You are much more vulnerable to just, you know, your drop turn bounces, or your opponent doesn't have anything that's worth killing and you just don't do anything after that.
I played into MSU 8-bound World Eaters, and I was, and my brain was smoking. I'm like, what do I kill? Like, where is my Jackal Alpha shooting? You know what I mean? Like, what am I putting rerolls into? I don't know. Like, I have to kill all of these, but, like, split firing was just, like, it was existential. I'm like, I don't know. And, you know, I had a couple games where, like, the Jackal Alpha, you know, rolled a one into a one. And it's like, okay, well, I'm not getting rerolls anymore. So the Benefictus unit that should be slightly below, you know, the primed and ready unit, Primus unit, in terms of output, is now very, very below the primed and ready unit, or the Chinkathar armor unit. So Yeah, absolutely. Like those, when the go turn flops, it flops hard. And like I said, there's you hope you roll a four or five for those neophytes to come back, and that's it. That's what you
And I
do.
mean, relying on a Jackal Alpha that hits on a three or needs to stand still is already more stressful than I am ever willing to play in a tournament.
Oh yeah, it was so many times like that was like the game to me. You know what I mean? Because it's like I played into a very very good Dark Angels Gladius player, and it was one of those things where we were talking like, if everything goes and these neophytes do what math says they did, I could have just won the game on turn two, because you know, dark the. Deathwing Knights don't particularly love, you know, a bajillion shots of damage one.
Or D3,
And
honestly, D3 is annoying for them as well.
exactly, or D3, yeah. Like neophyte units like can kill four, if not the whole unit, just, you know, through all the buffs and everything. But the Jackal Alphas did what the Jackal Alphas does sometimes and rolled like a one into a two, and it's like, well, that's game. That happened. So I blew up one Deathwing Knight unit, but you know, then everything else collapsed. So, but overall, you know, I will say, you know, I was happier with Host of Ascension than I thought I would be, going into it with very little expectations. And it's definitely fun. It's really a fun detachment. I enjoyed the testing. I enjoyed the figuring out, like bringing the double Nexus was, oh, it was beautiful.
Just
Like
having all of the CP in the world.
that, because yeah, like whenever that detachment just has four CP on a whim, it will use all every single one of those command points. Like if you wanted to, because you're bringing, you know, you got plus one to wound, you're primed and readied, 3-inch deep strike, throwing a grenade, like all that shit, going to ground. It loves all of them. It loves stratagems, and it does very well, you know, once you start pouring stratagems into it. Oh, I mean, overall, if people want to play a shooty kind of like, you know, sort of kind of feel as the index, you know, kind of like a, maybe like a Pauper Prince type list from like ninth edition, I highly recommend it. It was a lot of fun. I mean, are you gonna win LGT with it? Probably not, but like you could definitely do well. You could definitely like if you just want to like go out of GT and go 3-0 into like a 4-1 like GT, it's there for that. And I do recommend it for in terms of that, if that's what you want. However, if you want to win majors, then maybe do it instead here. Innes, why don't you talk to me about how your GT went?
Yeah, so I took an Outlander Claw list that's kind of hyper designed around being very MSU. The way I would describe it is it's trying to be like fighting a swarm of bees. There is no individual unit that matters, nothing is important, therefore everything is existentially annoying. And then you go from there. And once you have that design brief, you lead I lent into well, obviously I stole Eirik's list is ultimately what happened. But that's what the list is designed around. It's Outlander Claw, it's running three Kellermorphs and a Reductus Saboteur. It's running eight units of Acolytes, six hand flamers, all hand flamers, no icons, no demolition charges, two melee acolyte squads with all the accoutrement. Two squads of jackals, one squad of neophytes, just for some additional sticky. Once two squads of bikes wasn't enough. Three Goliath rock grinders with clearance incinerators, two Goliath trucks, and then five ridge runners, four with lasers, and one with the mortar. And I believe that's the entire list. It is 23 units. No unit costs more than 150 points. There are no leaders, no capacity for anything to trade with anything other than one unit. It is about 180 OC of stupid idiots with sticky objective and better shooting than people give it credit for, and better melee than I was expecting, but certainly not good melee by any stretch.
If any of our if any of you listening to the show are part of the We're part of the Stat Check Discord as well. When we were talking about this list in there a few weeks ago, Innes and I were we were like, it's like Eldar from Wish.com. It's just the most MSU bullshit shenanigans that you could possibly think up that sometimes also comes back and does it
Yeah,
again.
it's 10 little Angrons, and that's really funny when your opponent starts stressing out over, oh, what if it comes back? And you're like, well, you can't leave it there.
Yeah, I mean, this
He
guy's
will leave one
lit.
sergeant alive, and you're like, cool, I score primary. And they're like, wait, no, I thought I was stopping you coming back. And I'm like, nope, primary. That's fine too. I'll take either. Yeah, very, very enjoyable list. The kind of ethos behind it was that you could play a really, really aggressive turn one and turn two because you have like the almost guarantee that you're going to get some of it back, right? If you throw six or seven units at your opponent, you're going to get three or four of them back. And if that happens on turn one and then they come in again on turn two, you're going to get one or two or three of them back. So you just kind of, if you go early, you get like the additional advantage out of that plus one to the Cult Ambush roll, right? You want to play the game fast, and that's where I struggle with like deep strike based Jyn Mind builds right now, is that you can't really use that turn one. Because you're not on the board, you're in reserve. So if you're not playing an active and aggressive game, then why am I playing Jyn Mind Cult that wants you to play a really aggressive turn one right now? Now, part of that is the Pariah Nexus is a game pack, is a mission pack that really, really wants you to go second, with between end game scoring, generally easier time accessing damage output when your opponent has to walk forward, and secret missions. Going second is really, really powerful right now. So playing a list that isn't happy going first is just not a thing I want to be doing. I want to be playing a list that is very willing to take the fight to my opponent. So between scout, turn one pressure from ridge runners and bikes, the ability to get units back if I just go for it. I don't feel bad at all about just throwing my army forward and going, here is my army, kill a bunch of it, it'll come back. And then if I go second, yes, I don't get as much of that advantage of turn one because I'm going to deploy as hidden as I can. But I'm now going second in Pariah Nexus, so I don't, maybe I don't get the recursion quite as heavily, but I'm going to get my opponent the ability to secret mission as easily. I have endgame scoring, and they don't. They are now required to play aggressive into me as an army that wants you to stand on objectives at me. Great, please stand on all the objectives. I will drown you in flamer saves. You're going to get really like I would highly recommend if you're going to play this army, get like five piles of different colored dice and roll. Be like, all right, that's 24. That's five colors of dice minus one dice, and do it that way because otherwise this army takes forever to roll. You will roll 5d6 and 66 approximately 30 times a turn. And do you know what? That's fair enough. That's the price you pay for greatness sometimes.
Absolutely. It's all right. So, if anyone's been, not necessarily following the kind of like competitive escapades of Jyn Colts lately, Eric Lathuris, who I believe is still he's still a member of Team Australia, right? I know he
He
was on
is
a playing
not
team.
currently. He did not play this year or last year.
Gotcha. But was I think he was at one point on Team Australia. But he recently took an Outlander Claw list to a GT down in Australia and won as well. So definitely like and I will say like initially looking at the at yours and Eric's lists, they're something that was hard for me and hard for a few other people that I was talking to kind of like wrap our heads around is how are you able to be okay being disrespected in terms of like, let's say I'm playing against Chaos Knights with your list and it's like okay, everything on the line, go forward and just maim, slaughter, kill as much as I can, as fast as I can. So, what was your kind of like answer into those sorts of matchups?
I honestly wouldn't even go as far as to say I have a specific answer for an army like Chaos Knights. I have played against that army a lot, and I'm very comfortable with the kind of the gameplay that it wants to enforce on the game, which is, as you say, push forward, rip and tear. Now, my job as the player playing into Chaos Knights is to figure out a way to deal with that. And for me, that's going to be a lot of things like, How can I move block? How can I isolate? Where have they put brigands? Where have they put carnivores? Where, like, which sections of the board are high pressure? Which sections are high shooting? How can I outrange some sections? You know, can I, you know, is there a section of the board where there are no brigands? Okay, that's where my ridge runners are going to push. Okay, and I'm going to concede ground early. I'm going to potentially try to put out like some move blocks. You know, I'm going to throw forward my my bike squads. And I'm going to chain them between a ruin and be like, all right, you can come over. You can hit the bikes. That's fine. But you know, the bikes are on an objective. So if you want to charge them, then that's fine. You're going to end on the objective. That means I get wound rolls against you, and there's a bunch of trucks there, or I can get a line on you with the ridge runners, and you're not interacting with the ridge runners because they're playing at, you know, 36 inches straight line from your tank, so they can shoot you, but where you would need to go like an inch of movement around a terrain piece, right? So straight line, I can see you, and we're in 36, but you're moving 12 or 24 range, and you're going to have to move an inch diagonally, which means that you're not going to be within 36 of me, so I'm not getting shot back, right? And it's
Gotcha.
a lot of things like it is all about board control. It is you are not able to do this because I'm preventing you. You know, I have 23 units, and like I said, none of them matter. So if I need to surround a Chaos Knight, I will. You know, I measure 12 inches from the back of its base. Okay, that's the furthest you can go. There's a guy there, right? It's the same way you would play against planes. It's just you can't land here, therefore you can't, and you can't go through the wall because of the guys here, but you can't charge them because they're behind, they're an inch out of the wall, right? So, you know, you can't go through it, you can't go around it. And yeah, you're gonna murder those bikes dead, or you're gonna kill those acolytes, you're gonna kill that truck. You know, get the brigands, you know, you're gonna put like a truck into rapid ingress in most games. Well, that truck's going to rapid ingress in, and it's gonna, you know, jump in a move blocker. It's gonna charge a brigand in the backfield if you've thrown your carnivores forward too aggressively. There's a lot of capacity for just doing like just holding people up. And then you've got things like, you know, a carnivore's got six attacks. You know, the odds of it hitting and wounding six times is pretty low. You know, it's, you know, it on average it's gonna get something like four wounds. So if you charge it with a bike squad, the bike squad probably lives, which means that that carnivore is stuck there for a turn, right? And then it dies in their turn, and then you go to blips, and then you can come back at the end of their next turn, and you're like, great, this is fantastic. I have my unit back a decent amount of the time. Yes, you're going to get disrespected. Like, that is part of the appeal. But if you can make them disrespect you in a way that has them walk onto objectives, then you can kill three or four knights a turn, and the ridge runners are perfectly capable of killing a squad, or killing a knight each with their last cannons. Are they likely to? I'm not sure I'll go that far, but are they capable of it, and therefore your opponent has to play around it? Absolutely, yes.
It's funny, yeah. You tell me that, like, oh, Gabe, I don't know if I want to put my whole game plan around Mr. Jackal Alpha's doing his job, but those Ridge Runners, man, they love to take me to Vegas and
Look, Ridge Runners are in the list because they make your opponent play around them, not
it's
necessarily
true.
because they do their job. A lot of this list's game plan is you have two squads of them. One of the squad's job is to go as aggressively as possible. It is to throw itself forward, use the scout move, go and deal with something, you know, get dived in, use that plus one AP, you know, try to get behind the cover so they can't ignore it. I don't run survey augers on my mortar because I am terrified of rolling four fives, four fours to hit on four shots. I need that ability to hit on fours with my indirect, otherwise it will stress me out too much. So very strongly, so you know, dive forward, get behind cover, put some hurt on people, you know, threaten reactive moves, use their 12 OC, get in their face. You know, pop the four vulnerable save if it's going to keep them alive, because that's just really funny. But then that unit becomes, you know, it probably dies. But then you have the one unit that's using the 6-inch deep strike, that's using the 6-inch, that's now in a much, much better position because it can do basically whatever it wants given that space now. And that's kind of what I'm looking at. It's how do I create the opportunity for whichever of those squads is better positioned to go back into reserve? And then it's just about picking on a thing every turn that you have a close on, right? If they're not there to kill the full thing, but if they can do 10 damage to something, I can finish off the thing they don't kill with grenade or demolition run from the bikes or a charge, right? There's enough like slap and tickle damage, or you know, a greedy tank shock here and there. You know, I'm not above rolling a tank shock to try and roll four sixes. You know, that's what the strats are there for. It's not like any of your units matter. They might as well go and do something.
And that definitely makes sense. I think one of the things that, like, I was talking to, because me and another guy that was at Nova, we were kind of following, you know, how, because your GT was happening at the same time as Nova, and we were kind of keeping tabs on it, in between games, and he was just, you know, asking us, like, oh, how is this doing damage and stuff? It's like the thing about Outlander Claw is it doesn't do an insane amount of damage, but does enough damage. It doesn't have an insane amount of like movement shenanigans, but enough movement shenanigans. It's just like that's what it feels like. It, like looking at your list and looking at lists that are similar to it. It's like it's just enough. It's just enough to flip that objective. It's just enough to kill those, like five assault intercessors that are just chilling on there. It's always like you have just enough to kind of like meet that threshold that you need to like flip the points or deny primary or
Yeah,
whatever.
there's
Is
a
that
really nice like through line in Outlander Claw where because you have the Roadrunner buffs, you can stack 3 units of plus one AP. You can usually get rid of those 3 things a turn, plus minus a little bit, right? The list was very capable. In a pinch, it killed four katana in a turn or two katana in a turn, and then put damage on a third, right? And it was comfortable doing that while I was taking time off to do some actions and chase some scoring units. And it's like I can do that. There was a little bit of risk involved. I put like half damage on another katana instead of confirming kills on another one. Like I tried to go for the full three, didn't quite get there, right? But them's the risks. Sometimes you're just like sometimes you play for the high roll because it's funnier if it happens that way. Don't play for the high roll because it's funny, guys. Just as a general rule of thumb, I cannot say I recommend it.
But when it works, it's great.
When it works, you feel really cool. But with the wound rerolls, you can make a couple things die every turn, almost guaranteed. Unless it's like 2-up save and Armor of Contempt, in which case, like that's what Grenade is for, guys. Please stop trying to don't try to kill a Doran emissary with hand flamers. But it's not like it's impossible. Those games are the ones where you play a little safer, you play a little slower, you rely on your tank structure grenades. You maybe don't have as good a secondary game because your CP redrawing and you're not able to CP redraw into better cards because you're busy throwing grenade at people, right? And that's fine. It's okay to have a game where you accept that you're going to score a little lower to make sure you win. That's part of the appeal of a longer run tournament rather than like 60 players, 5 rounds. You want to play for that maximum score to try and place as best you can. Whereas once you're into like the more like spread out tournaments where it's single undefeated, you don't need to play four big scores. You just need to play to win. Which does give you a little bit of flexibility in that sense. So don't be afraid to like lean onto the other strengths of the army, like that.
And that yeah and I really like what you're saying in terms of like you can put yourself in a different mode, you know what I mean? You could put yourself into a mode of like I just need to do enough. I just need to have that one or two extra points here, one or two extra points there, and allow myself to claw into a win. Or you can, you know what I mean, realize like the board state is in such a way that I can go ahead and push, be a little bit more risky, and if it doesn't work out, that's fine. I've built enough of a lead that I can that if everything goes to shit, I could still kind of ride that lead into a win, which I really think that Outlander Claw like does actually pretty well. It is have momentum and keep it going very, very early. Something you said in your video was just, being able to scout onto objective and sticky them before the game even began, you know what I mean? So that way, like you're in your command phase, they're stickied, and then now your bikes fall back, go do whatever, just kind of be uninteractable, but they have to go be interact, but the points still have to be interacted because they're just
Yep, so you're
passively
able
bringing you
to
in
kind of
points.
force your opponent to play the game in a way they don't want to. You, as the player I'm playing against, now have to make a decision. Do you want me to score points or do you want to lose your units, right? Do you want to walk into the objective and get shot? And there isn't a third choice, right? Unless you have very specifically fire and fade mechanics, in which case, don't do this, right? If your opponent's playing Swooping Hawks, be a little careful, right? Don't throw your unit away for no reason. But those are the kind of units that you're gonna be happy jamming the bikes 21 inches forward and like demolish and running a warp spider squad on turn one. So you're okay in that matchup anyway. Don't worry, but don't sweat that.
I was about to say, if you're against Eldari, just pat yourself on
Just
the back that you
flamer them in
got a
the face.
free win.
Yeah, if you happen to be playing against like the one other army that has fire and fade mechanics right now, which is like Chronomancer Necrons, I guess, they're not throwing them onto objectives turn one. So in general, it's not a thing that I'm massively worried about. But yeah, it gives you just it's a that same thing again, right? It's agency if you go first in a pack that really wants you to go second. It's I never want to be unhappy when I like whatever the dice roll is in a game, I want to be like, okay, cool. Now there are always but benefits to both sides, right? If I'm playing against Hypercrypt, yes, I'm okay with my army going first. I would still rather go second because their army is so heavily weighted towards it. But I can't control that. All I can control is my response to what's going on in the game, which means that my job is to figure out how to make this as not bad as possible. And that mostly means, you got to figure it out. You can't just hope for the best. You have to make a conscious plan. And for this, the conscious plan is scout pressure, sticky objectives, and then scalpel units out, and then use aggression, get units back. And ultimately, secret missions are a pain in the backside for an army like this, where you want to play primary denial early because you're really good at having a ton of OC, right? Like, that's one of the most competitive advantages, is it has like 180 OC, it can stand on objectives really well and take them off you. Now, you can run the numbers and be like, if I deny primary on turn one and turn two and turn three and the secret mission, do they still hit 40? And if the answer is yes, well, then that's fine. Like, you capped them at 40. Your job is now to get past that and to cripple their secondaries. If the answer is no, they're going to get 51 anyway because it's linchpin and they're going to table me and get 23 and 23 on turn five, don't play a primary denial game, right? Like, you don't have to go that route. But the option is always available. And having the option available means that you can make a decision game to game. Is it correct for me to play this way? And when you're doing that, like, the army has so much ability to get tabled and still score outscore your opponent. If your game plan is run up a 15, a 15, a 15, and then cling to a five on turn five while getting tabled, but your opponent has to secret mission because you gave them a zero into a zero or a three into a three in terraform or linchpin or whatever, then they're going to have to secret mission if they want any primary. And now your job is crush their secondaries. And do you know what this army is really good at? Yeah, it's not amazing at killing. You're not going to kill a Land Raider on this on that's off an objective, just at all. Like, don't try. You don't need that smoke. But what you can kill is the five scouts that are scoring secondaries. So go and kill those guys. Go and Rapid Ingress a truck on top of them and say, how about you stop doing that? Go and deep strike the three units of flamers you just got back and nuke the squad. Rapid ingress to the rapid ingress, a flamer squad. Jump your bikes out of blips. Remember that even though you're going to bring the even if you're going to bring acolytes back through, the deep strike mechanic of Cult Ambush, you still get to place their blip, which gives you a ton of options for jackals. So your jackals are often like, very frequently just danger close in, coming in off of blips during your opponent's turn. And that if you're lost and then try to lose units in your turn, charge things, tag things, go and give Angron a big hug after you charged and killed the acolytes that he was next to. If it's turn one and two, that's a 50-50 your units coming back, and it wasn't living next turn anyway. So you might as well maybe have it coming off a blip again, right? Use your units aggressively. Your units are there to use, their points are there to deny. If you can crush their secondaries and their primary at the same time, like, you're going to hit 90, and yeah, your opponent might hit 80, and it might be the sketchiest win of all time. But the second you get past 91 points, your opponent can't win if they secret mission. So if you're going first, pressure. Just do it.
And something that's what I've noticed, and this is, and I've felt this with all the detachments, is GSC is kind of in a Goldilocks zone of overall, I would say, of being pretty turn one, turn or going first or second agnostic, whereas like we kind of have a game plan going either way, which is actually really nice. In Pariah, like with Host of Ascension, it's like, okay, I go first. That means I could, you get one turn of movement before I drop. If I go second, then I get all the Pariah advantages. Same thing with Brood Surge. You know what I mean? Go first. You have one turn to deny 10 aberrants, making a 5-inch charge out of Deep Strike. But if I go second, then again, same thing. You have all the Pariah, Outlander Claw. Same thing, Xenocreed. As well. So I think kind of like what you said, like whenever you're making your list and whenever you're thinking of like how I'm going to prepare for this GT, like realize like you don't have to like you could have a game plan going first and or second and a relatively good one at that. So having that in mind, I think it's really important whenever you're preparing for one of these larger events.
Yeah, I think ultimately it's about control, right? You cannot dictate, you cannot choose to go first or second. Therefore, you should always, you know, have a plan for both of them. You can't, if your game plan going into a game is hope you get second, then you've either built your list wrong or you've accepted a weakness. And it's okay to accept a weakness, right? Like that's part of list design. If you're playing a weaker faction, you kind of go into it and you're like, I am going to accept that in my worst matchup, I cannot afford to go second, right? I must go first or I must go second, whatever it is. But if you're doing that, then you better deploy to do that, right? Like if your game plan is I must go first, well, then you should probably deploy to go first because you're going to lose if you're going second anyway, right? And if your list can't even take advantage of the thing that it wants, well, then like don't play it, right?
Yeah. Absolutely. No, that makes perfect sense. So I kind of wanted to also explore how your opponents kind of reacted to seeing Chainstealer Cult probably for the first time since Codex release. I know in my games, like even the games I lost, like all of my opponents were like, that could have been really bad. I'm like, that's generally the idea is when the plan generations in a making, you know, goes off, it usually goes off pretty well. So it kind of felt good that GST still have that, like anything can happen. You know what I mean? Like we're experiencing this game together. I could have 4,000 points of Gene Stealers, you know what I mean, at the end of the game. I could have 1,500 points because, you know, we're pointed as if we might come back. So what was your experience kind of like going into those games?
Every single one of my opponents, except like the one that I had from the overnight game between game 3 and 4, who had a bunch of time to like research my list, were like, I don't know what anything does. Could you run me, and you know, I give them the rundown of like, this is the important stuff, but it's so much information. No one is ever taking it all in perfectly at that point, which is a shame, right? But you do your best, you know, you run through the important stuff, and then sometime on turn 3, your opponent will ask how much you'll use on that objective, and you'll tell them 28, and they'll go, what? And you'll go, yeah, remember how all my tanks are 6? And they'll go, fuck, and then, and that's been the experience probably. And then you have the one of, your opponent asks you, what's in reserve right now? And you're like, well, it's my turn 3, so nothing. But there could be a lot of stuff. Or
nothing but everything.
Nothing. However, you should probably still screen that. Or they'll go, what's in reserve? And you go, well, you killed 4 units and 3 of them came back, so I have 3 units. Or I would lose a unit to Overwatch, and they would be like, oh, so that's dead. And I'd go, hold on, 4 up, nope, and then re-deep strike it in the same phase. And that one, personally, was the highlight, that poor Tau player. But
oh, the psychic damage from them wasting a CP to accomplish absolutely nothing is, it's glorious. I love it so much.
The highlight, the one I never got to pull off, I played against the Hexmark Destroyer, which can repeat Overwatch. My desperate dream was to drop it in, lose it to like an Amnitic squad, and then hit the 4 up, drop it back in next to the Hexmark, have it re-Overwatch, kill me again, hit the 4 up, again, and then come back for a third time in the same phase.
God, I would die. I would be like, I don't even care if I lose anymore. Like
I wanted that so bad
internally.
Yeah, you have won the psychic game at that point. So that was really good fun. Just being able to like have that recycle mechanic and pressuring your opponent. I would say most people kind of like, once you explain to them that you were guardsmen, they kind of got it. But the number of people who still went, and they're toughness 4? And I go, yeah, dude, they're still dead, but they are toughness 4. Or they would go, like, no one was ever really shocked by the Ridge Runners. That was kind of a thing. I was like, Ridge Runners are definitely a thing that as a Gene Circle player, you look at and you're like, oh man, these guys are above rate. And every single person I spoke to is just like, yep, that's Ridge Runners. That makes sense. Though, because they have just, in their head, not internalized that genes are cults of garbage. So, so I'm just like, oh man, this is a data sheet that does something. It must be like everyone must think this over. No, everybody was always blown away by Demolition Run being able to hit units in combat, and because that's incredibly funny. And the fact that hand flamers are pistols, that one was one that threw people off quite a lot. Oh yeah. I put into a
I
few
don't like
blood
to tan that
surges.
way. Yeah.
Yeah. People were like, I'm gonna blood surge into them. I'm like, cool, they're pistols and on the objective. Are you sure? And they would go, maybe not.
Come on, brother. Let's roll the, we'll roll the dice together. We'll see how many
Well,
sixes I get if he tries at it.
it was because it was orcs and he would have had to use the strat, and he was like, well, this is just
Yeah.
no point. And I'm like,
Oh
great, that sounds even better.
yeah,
I significantly
absolutely.
prefer this variation of not stressing, of not giving me heart palpitations.
Of us actually having to roll the dice.
Oh, please don't make me actually have to do damage. And then I never hit the one on the Saboteur all weekend. Everybody's face when you tell them it's D3 plus three was a treat. I was like, it's how many arrows? And I'm like, yeah, dude, I told you about this three times and asked you if you were okay with walking into it when you did it. I'm going to blow you up and then shoot you with two Kalimors because this is our movement phase. Yeah,
Absolutely.
highlight, I killed four Bulgrin in my opponent's movement phase with
Oh,
two Kalimors and a Saboteur. That was good fun.
I believe it. Those the Keller Morphs are, oh my God, they're so beautiful.
I could not imagine not running three of them right now.
Yeah, I only had one, but it was just the nature of the beast of Host of Ascension.
At some
I
point, you
think
need
it.
points.
At some point, I actually need to turn my neophytes into the killing machines that they want to be, sometimes. But yeah, like any other, especially Outlander Claw or Xenocreed, I definitely say really loves having those Keller Morphs. Just as like a, I'm gonna don't fuck around and find out because Mr. Character Man in your unit might just be dead.
Sadly, they don't have precision anymore, but
Oh yeah, that's right. Yeah, they
you did
don't have precision
they
anymore.
lost precision and sustained it to D3 when they gained
But
AP and strength.
they gained dev wounds, which is, I mean, it's
I
cute.
think they
It's
were already dev wounds in the index, but they were sustained hit to D3 and AP 0. It was grim. They very rarely did anything. Whereas now they're just 6-6-2-1, nice because 6-3-1 almost all the time. Because when are they not shooting your Ridge Runner target? You have so many of them because those Stubbers just love to spray out hot crossfire. Yeah, no, the Kalimorphs were fantastic. Absolute standout unit of the army. Having one of them be your warlord and then just being like, yeah, I mean, it might walk to your home objective if you're not careful. That never even remotely came up. I don't know why I'm pretending. Yeah. No, it
I
was
know
very
that,
interesting.
and actually that kind of brings me to another point that I want to explore. Secret missions were out in full force here at Nova. I imagine that it was similar at the Hellstorm Major. And something that I think that people might not be too privy to is I think secret missions against Genestealer Cult is almost impossible. Like to, for
I
you
got
to
hit. Yeah.
reliably do, like other than the Warlord on home objective thing, like I think that one might be hard. But like, are you sure that I'm not gonna have battle line? Because I might. I just fucking might. Are
That
you
one is
sure that?
definitely really hard to do. I would say Unbroken Wall is as easy as it will be for any army going second, unfortunately. Like I gave up on Broken Wall twice at the weekend, once to Hypercrypt and once to Sisters in the finals. In neither case was it like a game-winning play. It was just I had won the game already, but it was a catch-up mechanism that I didn't stop in either case because I didn't need to. So there was definitely like, if you play in a mission like the Ritual or Six Objective Taken Hold, there are just a lot of objectives. And if you're going first, then
Sure,
people are going to
yeah.
be able to score Unbroken Wall against you. That is just a facet of Leviathan of Bryonexus that is going to happen. You were going to get Unbroken Walled some percentage of the time. Battle line one, I would say, is almost a write-off. Like you cannot comfortably on turn three pick the battle line one as a person playing against Genestealer Cult. So that's just not a thing. I could just have a battle line unit die and then just leave it in an ambush token, right? Because it's at the reinforcement step of one of your movement phases. I don't have to bring it in. So I'll just leave it there. And then I'll bring it in out of an ambush token on turn five in your deployment zone.
They're
Like
like,
you
oh, where
can't.
are we going second? And it's like, well, it doesn't matter. Hi, Acolytes. Where have you been all game?
Yeah.
You're there now.
I have secret ingress. And then yeah, the Warlord of Home Objective one. I would describe trying to kill your opponent's warlord with extreme prejudice as a fun thing to do. If it's Drago in the squad of 10 Terminators, maybe don't bother. But outside of that, most warlords are killable. But yeah, again, it's your game plan at that point is to score past 45 primary. Like you just got to go get your points. And Outlander Claw is really good at getting its points. So.
And so I guess going into those instances where, the secret mission may have been inevitable. Definitely the ritual and Unbroken Wall is, I mean, that's why people just should never play the ritual. I mean, to another reason number 537 of never playing the
No, I
ritual.
love the ritual's great for Outlander Claw because your opponent has to make the objectives in no man's land, and that's where all my stuff is.
I know it's good in
your
Unbroken
opponent's
Wall
getting five to punch.
sometimes, though.
Like I'm going to score 50, I'm going to score 45 points. You're not going to stop me. You're gonna run at me? No. And then you're making objectives. That means your unit has to be in wound reroll range. Ritual's great for Outlander Claw. I love it. It's great fun.
That's true. That's a good point. But so into those instances where the secret, how easy did you find yourself able to, like, okay, now I need to step on the gas and start building up this point differential?
So against any armies like that, I know they're going to be doing a secret mission from turn one. Like I play against Hypercrypt, my assumption is they're going to play for a secret mission. My job is to get my primary up as quickly as I can. So I played against Hypercrypt and Terraform. My job was go and threaten to Terraform all three objectives on turn one, make him come to me, and then give him, he got a four and then an eight and then a four, and that was fine. And then, I had gotten, I got a Terraform on turn two. I then, hit I think I got like a 14, 15, 14, 15 on primary, right? Just controlled three objectives for the entire game because, I killed all of his small stuff and then left a unit on objectives and they were all sticky. And then, yeah, on turn five, he got onto my home objective finally with a Catan. But, like, great man, you scored 40 points. I have 50 and I out-seconded you, convincingly. I think I scored 99 points in that game and he was, he pushed for his 30-second secondary point and he capped at 40 primary, right? Like, there was just no way he was ever losing that game. Once I get that level of aggression and I lock down the monolith, right? It's just get on objectives, stop him getting to yours, kill the stuff that threatens them, and then, you're not going to lose. And then against the sisters, it was six objective taken hold. I gave him a 10, then a 10, and then he was going into his turn getting a zero. I had had a 5 and a 15, so we were tied on primary, so he decided to go for it because he was about to get a zero. So went in for the secret mission at that point, and then I think that was one of the games I had the low end of comeback rolls. I hit like two on turn one and then didn't hit another one till turn five, or turn four. So I just didn't have a ton of resources in the bank, and I ended up like slipping on my primary a little bit. But my secondary game was significantly better than his because, like I said, I killed all of his small stuff, and then he had castigators that had jobs to do, and Vol that had a job to do as the only active units on the board. So anytime he drew an action secondary, he just couldn't do it. So he just and he was. He draws recover assets and he can't do it because the only things he has that can do it are tanks with jobs. And then he draws sabotage and he can't do it. So, he's just drawing all these dead cards. And I'm just like, yep, scored all my points, scored all my points. I scored 39 secondary and 35 primary that game because I got held down a little bit. And then, he got his Unbroken Wall going first because he just had a full health tank on each of the three objectives in the midfield. And I couldn't quite get a Ridge Runner onto the third, onto the last objective to deny it. But I had my 10 primary and I'd won the game, so it didn't matter, right? Like, there's definitely a world there where if it was make or break, the five Acolytes could have dropped down and tried to, like, roll a 9-inch charge that would have still given me an out into the game, even in the worst case scenario. If I had been, like, a little bit behind, I could still have denied that, right? Like, there was still definitely room there. Where not every army has that, but like Jinsu cults just have so much flexibility and recursion that you're going to be able to play around most of your opponent's stuff. If he had been going second, then I wouldn't have been under nearly as much pressure. I would have scored significantly more points, and it wouldn't have been a threat either, right? And it's six objective taken hold. You would have just played natural primary and probably gotten 40 anyway. So, what difference does it make?
Absolutely. And that you bring up a really good point. And I think it's kind of funny how, like, some armies, like, when you play them how you're supposed to play them, like a la World Eaters, you kind of just get your shit stomped, right? If your game plan every game as a World Eaters player are the nails are biting, like I'm turn one advancing charging and killing whatever I kill, you're gonna do great for two games and then you're gonna get your shit stomped. I think that GSC, when you play them as the they're the insurrectionist kind of faction that they are, that's really when they shine. There's a term, God, I'm trying to remember it. It's Anyway, so like asymmetric combat, that's the word I'm looking for. Asymmetric combat of like, yes, if I go head to head with you, if I put my vehicles against your vehicles, like I'm gonna lose. You know what I mean? And that's how gene stealers really have honestly always been, is whenever we just compare stat lines to stat lines, like
I
we
don't know,
lose.
man. Muscle Beach in 8th edition was very much, no, you can't kill me. But other
Fair
than that.
enough. When aberrants were able to get the real good juice, like then they were able to be like, no, actually, you're dead.
Rest in
But
peace, stop. Rest in peace, double stop signs. Two sergeants in a five in a ten, man.
oh, God, it hurts. It hurts my heart. I thought we were gonna get that with Bruce Surge, but we didn't. But it's okay. It's
We're
okay.
not even damage three anymore, man. What were you expecting?
I don't stop. It hurts too much. But you know what I mean, when you play for the when you play for the I'm not going to punch your big stuff. I'm not going to go up, but I am going to kill every method you have of playing an actual game of Warhammer, where all that's left is okay, like sure you could charge Ingron in, but how are you going to hold primary? Or, you know what I mean? Like, how are you going to like do what you need to do if your DDAs are all holding primary or doing containment and stuff, which happened a lot in a lot of my games where my opponent's like, why the fuck am I doing this? Why is my land raider over here? You know what I mean? Like doing sabotage. I'm like,
You're
I
like,
don't know,
well, you
man,
like
because
build everything else.
I yeah, everything else is dead. Go have fun. Do sabotage with your expensive thing. And Outlander Claw, like having the movement shenanigans and just the ability to put damage into things that they quote unquote shouldn't, I think really lends itself to that. Is that kind of like how you felt throughout your games, where it's like, I'm going to like I'm not gonna do the most Warhammer thing possible and go like kill all your good stuff. I'm gonna kill all your shit and win that way. Is that kind of
No,
like
there
how
was there's a
you?
decent amount of I'm going to pick one good thing to kill every turn, right? The thing that you lift your one Ridge Runner squad, you fire the mortar at it, you fire the Ridge Runners at it, and then you finish it off. And then you're like, all right, one thing a turn comfortably, and then I might stretch for a second if the other Ridge Runners are in a good position or they didn't die or whatever, right? But one thing comfortably and then attack, and then it's attack your score and deny your primary, right? That's the two fastest every turn is how do I give you like can I give you a zero? No, can I give you a five? Okay. And then if I can't give them below a five, I'm like, how do I change this entire game state? Because that's no longer my plan is no longer primary denial, right? And then I have to look for, killing a bigger thing. But because if you can't deny primary, you have to kill stuff. But it's always start with attacking primary. Then it's how do I kill secondary units? How do I make an area of the board unable to be attacked? If I have an objective that's sticky, what could get to that this turn? Okay, how do I kill everything that's in that area? What came back? What can I throw away to try to die this turn? Where do I need to move block? What can I kill? Do the bikes need to advance or can the bikes stand somewhere? Can the bikes walk onto an objective? What can I charge? Where are my tank trucking? How am I spending my CP? And it's just run through the checklist of deny primary, deny secondary, kill the second most important thing. And as long as you kill the first most important thing every turn, generally most armies will run out of steam by the time that you've gotten your third or fourth unit back.
Exactly. Yeah, and that makes perfect amount of sense. I like watching your games and just like listening to what you were talking about and what Eric was talking about. It just I think people like forget sometimes that there's only five games or five rounds in a game of Warhammer. You know what I mean? And GSC like thrive kind of in that environment of like I can fuck with you for five turns. If there was a sixth turn, like we'd be screwed. But for five turns, like I can just make your life really, really unfun
For
into
what it's worth, I ended five of the seven games with significantly more material than my opponent and then functionally tabled. Like, this list is perfectly capable of stressing your opponent's resources to the ability to the point where they're not killing your stuff because they are having to spend time and energy holding resources and reclaiming their own territory, which means that they just run out of stuff. Theirs doesn't come back. The game against Hypercrit, which was four Catan and a Monolith, I ended up down on material, and the finals I ended up down on material because I had a rough game of it with the recursion, and also it was just like 10 tank sisters, which it's gonna end up on material. It's got a lot of heavy bolters. Every other game, Horde Orcs ended up basically tabled. Drakari ended up basically tabled. 15 crisis, 15 five crisis suit squads Tau ended up basically tabled, right? It's just you can kill a lot of stuff when you take it turn by turn. You don't have to kill. You're not playing Mount Ka Tao. The game does not have to end on turn three. Take your time. How do you eat an elephant bit by bit, right? You gotta just take a bite out of it and then not get hit back. And as long as you're not getting punched in the face every time you take a bite, your opponent will run out of arms before you run out of blood, before you run out of time.
And that kind of brings me to the point of like what a lot of GSC players are kind of like feeling right now. And there are times where I'm in this camp as well, is the army rule, right? Is like it's not dependable. It's sometimes it works great, sometimes it doesn't. I know that like in my games I tried to lean into it, and in your games you tried to lean into it. It's like a 4-up is better than a 5-up any day of the week, so you might as well try and get it. But how much of your game plan was like, okay, on average I should be getting X amount of units back. Let's proceed
Oh,
with this
a
game
huge amount. Like
then.
half of my game plan was very literally, I am going to throw stuff at you that you know you have to deal with, that I know some of it's coming back. I will play, my turn one against Necrons was I'm going to drive this bike squad forward, and I'm going to charge a monolith with it, because the monolith with six attacks on twos and twos is not going to roll six and six. There is such a low odds of that happening. Everyone individually is a 70% chance of going through, which means that it's a 50-50 of doing it with two attacks. So you extrapolate that out, it's a one in one, worse than a one in eight for this unit to die. All right, cool. So tag the monolith, because it's going to die, but it's going to die in his turn. So, and then I have a four with them getting back. So I'm only using half a bike squad, right? I'm not even using a full bike squad. And if it dies on turn one, then you're not even using half a bike squad. You're theoretically using like a third of a bike squad, because there's a one in three that'll come back the second time, right? So you have so much ability to just, any unit that you push in on turn one is, you're only pushing in a third of a unit, right? Mathematically. So if you push in seven, you're going to get three or four of them back, and you're going to get one or two of them back, right? Like it's just math. Yes, there's going to be variance in that, but the second that you lean away from the possibility of it being of it going well, you never like play for the possibility of it just going average. And yeah, you're going to have a couple of games where you feel like you're a little bit down on material, but you don't take bad traits for it. You do things you want it to do anyway that have upside because of the mechanic, right? It's, well, this unit needs to do this anyway, and it's setting up a good Overwatch, and I'm denying primary, and also it might just come back. And then your opponent has to sit there and go, can I afford for that unit to come back, or do I have to ignore it? And, most opponents, like, part of this is probably because people are not used to playing around it, but most people will go, I don't know how to deal with this either way. So they just do the instinctive thing of kill it. And then half your stuff comes back, and your opponent's in a bad position because of it, because people are not used to playing around the mechanic. So if you don't lean into it at least a little bit, you are just leaving room on the table for your opponent to make mistakes.
And I think one of the core tenets of Warhammer is trading, right? Like every army like has like its threshold of willing to trade, should trade. And GSC just removes that from the table entirely
Yeah, I am
of
not
like,
trading. I am using a unit, you are trading.
Exactly. Like and I mean, you're going to have to expose, you're going to have to do something to kill this. You know what I mean? Things just don't die for, for free. Like something has to go in to kill it. And if my and half the time turns one and two, it will be a bad trade for you even to move that unit to be able to kill them. Like now they're more exposed and I have my shit back. And now I'm shooting you in your, I mean, where you thought you would have relative safely. And what did you gain from it? Nothing. So many times in my games, like it's like they're like, well, I moved I charged my, JPIs up and it killed those pier strains, but your pier strains are back, so now they get to die for nothing. I'm like, yep,
Yep, that sounds
that's how it
exactly like
works.
that sounds exactly like punching a swarm of bees.
Awesome. Well, we're kind of getting towards the end of the episode, but I just have a couple more questions in this. So, overall, like, what was your so something we were talking about before the show? Is like every feeling like every game was a hard game. So I know whenever I was playing Nova, I asked one of my buddies that I was there with. I'm like, man, am I just like hitting like the top 10% players of every fucking like that are here with every single one of my games? Which very well could have been. I mean, maybe not the top 10%, but I mean they're all fairly good players. But he was like, no, Gabe, you're playing Genesis Occult. Like it's gonna be hard. Like they're not gonna be easy games. And I know that's something like a sentiment that you had as well is like there really like outside the you had one game that went pretty solidly your way from the get-go. But other than that, like how was it just having to kind of be on the gas, like keeping your head in the game for the entire tournament?
It's a lot of dice rolling. It's a lot of individual unit management, right? Like, ultimately, playing, I think something like Deathwing Knights is easier, right? Just it is. You are thinking about, the possibility range of 6 or 7 units or 10 units, not 23. Trying to keep that many things in your head is difficult. Now, your opponent is also going through the same calculus, but they're only doing it for a single game. So you kind of have to hope that you're just going to beat them on experience with that, which, is what happens a lot of the time. The idea of trying to play it for like a 10-round tournament like LGT is definitely weighing on me right now. I think that is definitely what I would say. Now, there is a couple of components to that. One is the games that I played on stream were a lot more stressful. Part of that was because I wasn't able to do like I was using the stream dice, so I wasn't able to do like my piles of five with five different colors kind of thing that was getting me through the early 4 rounds. So I leaned into like a crutch of okay, I have figured out a quick way to deal with this, and then like never adjusted for playing like which is with a set of dice. So that's partly on me. Like I probably should have been more cognizant of trying to do the same kind of thing with like piles of five of the same color dice and just being more active like with piling them back. And then just the stress of playing on stream on top of that didn't help. I played 3 games in a row on stream. Which is always a lot. But it's a tiring army. You are moving a lot of stuff, you're making a lot of decisions. You're running back and forth between, your dead pile and your live pile. You've got icons, you've got reanimation. So, you have to have a separate pile of these are dead units that are dead, these are units that are dead but coming back, these are models that are dead and units that are alive, right? And you have to manage all of it. Like I had little Roman numerals on the back of bases. What I should have done is get like loom bands or like base rings so that I could like more visually see it rather than having to read off the back of them. But I just didn't have time to put that together. I only have 5 different colors of base rings, which didn't work for 8 squads of acolytes. So that's something I'm going to need to fix for. I'm probably going to try and get that fixed for Champs Cup in Dallas in a couple of weeks. Just lots of room for, optimization with it. But part of that is just lack of understanding of, this was effectively, my 5th through 11th games of playing the faction. Like this version of the list, I played, 4 or 5 practice games with it and then launched into it. And, I am still learning, the optimizations with it and still getting better with it as we go. So.
That makes a lot of sense. Hold on, sorry, 1 second. I'll edit this part out.
Oh, you do editing?
Well,
I
I
just,
do
I just,
that.
I just launched the live raw feed, like my pure unrated bullshit. I'm not editing this. No one wants this. Nobody cares. Well, they'll see it, warts and all.
I say that, and there is like a more than half chance that I actually f completely forget to, and then everyone can see here in this part.
Perfect.
No, I
Look,
have a.
if
Have
people
a...
didn't want to hear the
Yeah,
behind the scenes, they wouldn't be in our Discords.
that's true. I have a buddy of mine who's buying me a AdMech Codex, so he was just wondering if I still wanted it. I'm like, hell yeah, dude! I want to play. I'm a huge fan of lore, especially when it comes to Gene Sealer, Occult, and Day of Ascension is one of my favorite books of all time. Not just Warhammer books, but books. And so I feel like it's natural for me to also play AdMech as a GSC player, and to slowly infect the mind of the Omnissiah. So just doing my part. Anyway, so yeah, that I could definitely see like the I don't think people really realize like how much of a pain in the ass it is to physically play Gene Stealer Cult. I know I wasn't on my first like whenever I first started playing GSC, like the whole my dead pile, my cult ambush pile, my these neophytes are gonna come back because I get D3 plus three. It was like my people talk about ordered chaos, like in there I had chaos like all around my table, like literally, like, yeah, having the knowledge of the logistics it takes to play the army, I think, is sometimes a huge portion of doing well with the
Yeah,
army.
there was one person I used to see who back in the day when you would get models, whatever, you went back in reserve, who had like a 15 like box grid, like 5x3 with like the unit, like, and he would just put the models into it and then a bit of paper on top of them, dead. Or and then if there was a bit of paper, that unit was in reserve and he would figure out which one it was, and they'd be like, all right, so these guys need to come back, or these guys go into this tray, this goes, and it was like, man, that is too much organization. And I did not play GAC in 7th edition. I just could not bring myself to do it. I just put Servo Skulls on my list so I didn't have to deal with that. And Kotyaz, for anybody who remembers the dark days of 7th, Servo Skulls and Kotyaz was the solution to never having to think about Jean Serra cults. So.
I can imagine. What was the best was having all that and having to manage Aberrants fighting on death and all that other shit. I was like, God, Jesus, why did I do this? I should have just played knights. Okay, well, so we got through a lot. My one final question: if you had to run GSC not playing Claw, what would you be playing?
Oh, that's such a difficult question. I have literally not played a game with another detachment that wasn't Outlander Claw yet, because nothing, like, I'm going to be very real, nothing in the book excites me. I am playing Outlander Claw because I think it is powerful. I think it's attacking the metagame from a different direction, and I wanted to see if I could, right, frankly. There was a little bit of, like, ego in there. I saw Eric do it, and I was like, well, it can't be that hard if Eric can do it. I really like the idea of the Barostactic list, but I just cannot. I refuse to roll charges from Deep Strike. I just do not enjoy playing that style of game. I have spent the entirety of this edition being a rapid ingress player, and playing, around, and I'll roll a nine if I can, happy to do it, but it's not my preferred approach. So maybe something like a Barostactic list that played like almost exclusively on the board, playing like from trucks with a bunch of Ridgerunners, and didn't really bother about like playing, Deep Strike at all. Maybe like one unit with the +4 to charge, but even then, that stresses me. I could also see doing like the Brood Brothers list and going like the full, like, just pure point shooting, running like triple Leman Ross with the full rerolls from the, what is it, the regular Battle Cannon one, and then like a bunch of Hellhounds, just be like, pure like MSU tank bullshit with kind of three Ridge, like six Ridge Runners, three Rock Grinders, three Hellhounds, three Chimeras, three Leman Rosses, and just playing like under costed tank spam, because all those calls are super cheap. And I could maybe see like playing something like that. I would probably play like a couple of Leman Ross exterminators in there, the ones that stack AP, because you're going to need it. The army's very low AP. I could see running something like that and having like a vaguely interesting time with that, and then like six squads of Handflamer Acolytes, just, because they're good and efficient. I could see playing something like that and not having a bad time with it. But I think that just sounds worse than playing with a bunch of trucks and bikes and the fun GSC stuff in Outlander, unfortunately.
Eldar from Wish.
Yeah, or I could play, what would it be like? What's like a really, really crappy version of a storm? Like iron spittle, like it's spittling,
Iron drainage.
Yeah. Iron cloudy.
I'm cloudy.
It's not an iron storm, but it's a little cloudy.
Iron overcast.
Iron 30% chance of rain.
I've really kind of I think I was mentioning it before, but something that I was really wanting to experiment with, and it kind of real I realized like through Nova is like if I had advance and charge on 20 neophytes, like that's really nice. That's just a lot of OC that can just poop out. And and then they get to get a budget Primus when you spend a CP, and you get better recursion because you get to reroll. And it's per player turn that you get to reroll your Colt Ambush roll with the
Go and die in
neophyte
their
charge.
turn.
Go have fun. You know what I mean? You guys go forth. I don't give a shit. I'm gonna keep trying to get you back. But yeah, Xenocreed definitely definitely speaking to me. I just the idea of leaning into like the horde kind of mental, the horde kind of play style, and
Yeah, it makes
just
sense. I have really enjoyed not having leaders in Jinsei cults, so I don't know if I would want to go that route right now.
that's wild. Yeah, that's such a totally different way of playing GSC, because even whenever like I was playing Twisted Helix in ninth edition, I was still having tons of
All about
characters
the character buffs. Yep, I
running
used to
around.
play like 14, like 9 character GSC. You know, you would run that second detachment for the second Kellermorph. Yeah,
Oh yeah,
no,
with
I've
Impasta ninth edition Kellermorph, that man came for blood.
yeah, the Kellermorph with AP2 down when he got an extra hit for every shot, and you'd just be like, so this guy's gonna fire his three guns three ways at three different squads and kill all three of them. Yeah, back in the day.
Wormtooth
Or
rounds, we're good.
this was pre-worm this was 8th edition pre-Wormtooth rounds as well. This was when it was just like the true murder Kellermorph of 8th edition. Oh, good names. But no, we are stuck in our ways, unfortunately now. Wormtooth rounds were like, replication of almost as good as what it used to be.
And now we're now we're in 10th edition, where we
Yeah,
just
the Kellermorph is still insane somehow. Like, it's still maybe the best data sheet in the book. But it's definitely not what it used to be. I do miss my Deep Strike and 9 away, move 6 after shooting as well from last edition. Just so many variations of that model. I'm going to be picking up his deck in Magic because it just looks like good fun. So
Oh yeah, I forgot that that Magic started doing a whole 40K thing. Yeah, I saw they made a Biophagus. They made a
yeah.
Biophagus card, I
Well,
think.
the Kellermorph rule in that game is whenever something deals exactly one damage to one of your opponent's things, he deals another two. So he turns
That's
all
way
your one damage
better.
into three. So I'm like, that sounds really fun. So I'm building that at the moment. So yeah, Jinsei cults through and through. I've even promised that if we win Champs Cup, I may end up having to get a Jinsei cult tattoo. So we'll see how that goes.
Oh God, I'd love to see that. It is. Yeah. Any final words? Anything that you want to say? Like overall, how are you feeling about GSC? You know, wondering
Outlander
what kind
Claw
of.
is fantastic fun. I'm playing it for Champs Cup. I will probably play it for the LGT Invitational. I am probably waiting for some form of buff before I touch the other detachments at the moment. I would really like to like the other ones, but I really feel like I am missing a bit of something. And then I think about the idea of playing a melee-based army into Mutant with Vortex Beasts, and it makes me cry. So I'm going to not do that for the time being.
Oh, I know. I know from a fact that Aberrants will fuck up an MVB. Plus one to wound against monsters and vehicles, only being one CP in Brood Surges.
That's pretty good.
It's pretty nice. It's pretty nice. You know, Mr. Abominant, you know, coming in with five swings of a Laz Hammer. Oh yeah, he's having a good time.
And then how much damage does that unit do to Magus on average? Like three or
Okay, well, listen, you know, I'll roll my dice and he'll roll his dice and I
then
win.
he'll
It's just
ignore
how
a
it
bunch of
works.
your successes and he'll reroll all the other ones and yeah.
True. Sweet. Well, Innes, I really appreciate you coming on the show. I'm excited to see how Champs Cup goes. I'll be following that. What I'm most excited to see is the pairings. I play GSC in two vibe checks ago, whenever we were doing teams. The pairings for GSC was always wild. It was always like, I could delete them, I could die, I don't know.
Look, I'm fully ready for nobody to know what's going on, and that's my favorite part. So.
Exactly, just thriving in the chaos. And I hope you have enough energy to bring him to LGT. I'll completely understand if you don't,
We will
because
see.
that's
If I am not taking them, they are arranged that a teammate of mine will be using them. So they will be at LGT. I just don't know if it'll be in my hands.
sounds good. All right, well, again guys, you can go ahead and you can find Innes in the links that I'll be posting with the episode. If you want to come and talk about the episode, Bug me, you can definitely go into the Ascension Day Discord. I highly recommend joining the Patreon for the Stat Check Discord and hopping on there. I've learned so much hanging out there, getting some great games, getting to meet a lot of really cool people, a bunch of people that I actually, met up with at Nova, and so it's always nice being able to broaden your community. But yeah, well, guys, hope I see you, talk to you all soon. Thanks.